Nice to see you all here. I want to say something about studying the Dharma. When the Dharma that we're studying is a text. Of course, if we read a text or if we hear a text, we can't help but take it in with our minds. That's fine. But in Zen, studying with the mind is only a little bit of study. We study much more with the breath than we do with our intellect in order to really absorb the Dharma that we're receiving into our bodies and into our minds. We study much more with our bodies, receiving the words that we're reading or receiving the Dharma talk that's going on from whatever it is. Sometimes it's the sound of the traffic. Sometimes it's the sound of the heater going on. And sometimes it's something that flashes in front of us and we see it with our eyes. This is how we study Dharma. We can have ideas about what we're seeing or ideas about what we're hearing, but that's just on the surface of things. And it's important to know that. So when, for example, in my case, when I am studying a Dharma text, I read it. That's one time. Then I read it again, maybe not right away, maybe a day or 10 years later. But I'm on a spiral. I'm in a new place in the spiral. So the first time, maybe I'm in the bottom place. And the second time, I'm a little higher up because I've lived longer, even one moment longer, much less a month or a year. And I have a slightly different perspective. Then the third time, again, I'm in a different place in the spiral. And I think you'll find, if you think about your lives, that when you consider the way you experience your life, even if the same kind of thing seems to be happening just the way it did, and of course that's not possible, you know, thanks to impermanence, you have a different perspective. And so when we consciously choose to study the Dharma, and we consciously choose to read a text or something like that, we should recognize that we are not the same people who studied it before. And the Dharma that we receive will not be the same as we received it before. What's tricky about that is that the intellect may say, I read that already, but that's why relying on the intellect for studying the Dharma is insufficient. Because the intellect, and it's wonderful, I mean, I love my what's left of my mind, but intellect is quite nice. It's quite lovely, but it has a very particular way of taking in information, of taking in the world and taking in Dharma. And it always tells a story and it always puts it in a certain context that the intellect itself can handle. The way the breath takes things in is unsayable. You listen to a Dharma talk with your breathing, you can't quite say what's happening. Or your body receives some information, some words that are floating through the air. You breathe with it. The words kind of touch you in different places in your body. You can't really say what's happened. But maybe sometime later, when you're walking, or when you're taking a shower, or when you're doing some other kind of pleasant or unpleasant activity, suddenly your body tells you what it knows, because it's received the Dharma in the way a body receives the Dharma. So it's very important, I feel, that we begin to practice receiving the Dharma talk, whether it's from a text like this, or whether it's from the sound of a river or the sight of falling snow. We start to receive it in a much bigger way than simply the way that says, oh, I know. Because mostly when we receive the Dharma, we can't say what it is that we know, but it filters through our lives, and suddenly all that not knowing becomes oh. And that oh is good enough. And I know that you've experienced this. I know you all have. So I don't know how far I'll get tonight, but that's fine. I never do. I'm going to go back to the text that I read on Zoom. I guess it was last week?
Yeah.
It's one of the most wonderful texts. This is, by the way, for those who don't know, Dogen's Treasury of the True Dharma Eye. Zen Master Dogen's Shobo Genzo that Kaz Tanahashi edited, and I was the associate translation editor of this text. It's Dogen's life teaching. Maybe some of you like fish, and I don't mean to eat. Maybe some of you like fish swimming. And maybe some of you like birds. And maybe you like birds flying or beep, beep, you know, chirping, something like that. We see fish as outside of us. And it's quite obvious that they are. They're, you know, floating or swimming through the water. And we see birds out only outside of us, only outside of us. And we see them flying, or down at Venice Beach, we hear the blackbirds singing, and you know, there seems to be a billion of them. They're so beautiful. We hear it as something that's only outside of us. And of course, in the world of form, they're outside of us. But what we share, what our lives share with fish or birds is far more than that inside-outside relationship. This text is trying to help us find the bird flying in the air as not separate from us. Find the fish swimming in the lake or the river or the sea as not different from us. Find ourselves as not different from us. It may sound a little strange, but I think most of you will acknowledge that at one time or another, you find yourself outside of yourself. This text is intended to help us put to rest that painful delusion. The fish swims in the ocean, and no matter how far it swims, there is no end to the water. So I want to do things a little differently tonight. I'd like you to close your eyes, and for a moment, just imagine being a fish swimming in the ocean, and there is no end to the water you're swimming in. Just go ahead and swim. So much water. You'll never get to the end of it. A bird flies in the sky, and no matter how far it flies, there is no end to the air. So now take off and fly. Go fly through the endless air. The air is beginningless, it's endless, and you are moving through it because your world is the beginninglessness and the endlessness of the water and the air. However, the fish and the bird have never left their elements. All that swimming and all that flying, and the fish and the bird have never left their elements. When their activity is large, their field is large. When their need is small, their field is small. They are never separate from their field, whether it's large or small. Thus, each of them totally covers its full range, and each of them totally experiences its realm. No matter where the fish is in the ocean, no matter what little place it's in, it is totally experiencing its realm. No matter where you are as a bird, flying in the beginninglessness and the endlessness of the sky, no matter what branch you land on, no matter what cloud you pass, you never are anything but totally experiencing your realm. So I asked you last week, what is your realm? And we can think that the realm of the fish is only the sea, but that is improper understanding. And we can think that the realm of the bird is only the air, but that is also improper and somewhat limited understanding. If the bird leaves the air, it will die at once. If the fish leaves the water, it will die at once. We should know that water is life, and air is life. The bird is life, all of life, and the fish is life, all of life. The fish is your life too, and the bird is your life too, and you are the life of the fish and the bird. And this is what it means to say that we are covering the full range and totally experiencing our realm. It is more important to take that in, your body and your breath and your no thinking mind, than it is to grasp a concept about what I just said to you. Because our realm is not a concept, and life is not a concept. So when I said last week, we should ask ourselves, what is our realm? And when I said this week at the beginning of this talk, that we share more with the fish, our life shares more with the fish and with the bird than the intellect can say, This is what I'm talking about. The elements of the fish include water, but it is not limited to that. It includes the beginninglessness and endlessness of water, but it is not limited by that water. The bird includes, the elements of the bird's life includes the air. The bird flies in the air. The world of form is form, but it is not limited by form. It is not limited in any way. And when we look at our realm, we should begin to look at our realm in the same way that the bird and the fish experience their realms. So maybe I can ask you, what is the realm? You are Zen practitioners. What is the realm that is your realm, the bird's realm, the fish's realm, the tree's realm, the water's realm, the air's realm, that is beginningless, or I'll say it, that is without beginning and without end. It's a little easier to say than all those syllables. What is your realm? When we are cultivating our understanding, we are cultivating our ability to move through this realm. Yeah. Thank you. Well, I didn't get to the first page. That's the life of the Dharma. But I hope that I hope that you'll begin to to experience your life in some way where you know that you and the fish and the bird and the wind and the water and the air and each other and all beings share this realm. We don't have to name the realm, but we live in it. There are words in the Buddha Dharma to name this realm, but tonight they're not important. So as we chant and finish the evening and drive home, just like I asked you to just have some small imagination of being the bird flying through the beginningless and endless air, such long words, and being the fish swimming in the sea with no beginning and no end, without losing your attention to what you're doing, driving a car. Don't lose that. You're driving a car in that realm. There is nothing you can do that is outside of that realm. Because as Dogen says, if the fish leaves the water, it will die at once. And if the bird leaves the realm of the air, it will die at once. We don't want you to die. But when we are not truly aware of where we live, it is dead to us. And we become dead to ourselves. That's not a good thing. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Let's chant that 4 vows. You can turn this off or something. Oh no, I don't know. I don't know what happens, so you just do it.